Hey everyone, welcome and welcome back to the Letters and Layers podcast, where we talk all things books, life lessons, streams of consciousness, insight, all the things. This is your host, Amaka. It is Thursday, August 14th when I am recording. I'm in the middle of my workday, but I have a nice chunk of time in between patients, so I'm making the most of this time. This week has been a little iffy. I haven't been feeling my greatest, but I'm feeling better today. So I was like, while things are good, let's get things done. My siblings are coming in town for the weekend, which I'm really excited about. My sister flies in late tonight. My brother flies in late tomorrow. So we're going to spend the weekend together. Really excited about that. There's the Chicago Air and Water Show is this weekend. So we're going to go, me, the sibs, the husband, and then we'll figure out some other things to do. They've both been to Chicago before, so it's not entirely new, but we're trying this thing where we kind of try and see each other at least a couple times a year intentionally, and hopefully we can keep it going. You know, we're all adults, all super busy, but want to really try and make time for each other. So looking forward to that. My teenage cousin came in town last weekend. She's 16. She'd never been to Chicago before. So I had been wanting her to come and visit and, you know, just see the city, show her the city, do some things. So we had a good time too. She has since gone back to Texas and I think she starts school this week. So I wanted to make sure she got here before she gets busy too. But yeah, things I would say are going pretty well. And I kind of wanted to dive into the content of this episode because I have been meaning to talk about dream count, honestly, since I finished the book in June. That was my main reading priority in June. And, you know, with Chimamanda coming out with a new book, there is always so much hype, because she is lauded as such a literary powerhouse, and rightfully so. But it was interesting to kind of see the mixed response to the book. I am one who likes to kind of let the hype die down with some things before I purchase the product or the book or whatever. I love Chimamanda and I love her work, so this was not one of those things. I didn't pre-order the book, but I went to the bookstore the week or weekend it came out and bought it. So I pretty much got it as soon as it was like out, released to the masses. And I didn't read it right away, but I had decided June was going to be the month. I was going to start it on the 1st and I was going to make sure I finished it before the end. So I had finished it. I have a lot of thoughts considering what I've heard from other people about the book and then kind of what I felt myself. So honestly, I'm just going to dive in. I think I love the name Dream Count, and I think many people may think of the title and think of perhaps dreams that these women, first of all, let me start with what the essential synopsis of the book is. So it is a collection of, I would say, four sub-stories. So there are four women in the book who are all kind of connected to each other in one way or another. They're all anchored by who I would consider, I wouldn't call her the main character, but she kind of is. All the stories of the other women branch out from her story. So she's the anchor story, Chiamaka. Chiamaka is a travel writer who lives in the DMV. I think she's based in the DMV, but goes all over the world and writes about her excursions. And then you have Zakora, who is her best friend, who also lives in DC. And then you have Omelogo, who is Chiamaka's cousin, who is based in Abuja, I believe. Lagos or Abuja. And they are those type of cousins that they stay in regular contact. They know what's going on in each other's lives. So she is also a major part of the book. And then you have Kariatu, who is Chiamaka's support in terms of like housekeeping, kind of keeps her life running domestically. So each of these women have their own stories in the book. We get to know them. We get to know their backstory. We get to know their relationship and dating history. So I think many people probably would describe the title as, or they would, when you think of the title Dream Count and you read the stories of the women, I feel like I've heard some perspectives where the title is describing the dreams that the women had as far as partnership, companionship, long-term relationship, those things not really realizing themselves or panning out the way they had hoped. And that very much makes sense, you know? But I also see the title Dream Count being relevant as far as dreams that the women realized for themselves and for other people. Like, I'm just thinking about Chiamaka, who is a travel writer, and that's not something that many Nigerian women or Nigerian people in general would be audacious enough to pursue as a legitimate career. Many people in her story were saying that she should kind of leave that, abandon those pipe dreams, and go and get a substantial job. But she didn't listen. She knew what she wanted, and she pursued it. Now, I think there is definitely a level of privilege that needs to be acknowledged, because Chiamaka's family is very wealthy, very extremely wealthy. So she has the ability and comfort to be able to pursue a career as precarious as travel writing, because that's not something that's going to afford you regular income. Unless you are established and you have relationships in the industry and you've been writing for years. We are introduced to Chiamaka's story around her travel writing career in its nascent stages. So she is by no means a regular professional writer. She's still finding her way. But she's able to do this because she has the financial support of her parents. And I feel like the book particularly highlights her father's willingness to support her, because her mom just does express some objection here and there, like telling Chiamaka's father, why do you support this? Why do you just give her what she wants? And he's like, because I want to. I think that Chiamaka's father kind of admires her ambition to want to do this, despite whatever people may be saying, that she's kind of, her head is in the clouds, she's not being realistic, blah, blah, blah. And she does eventually make headway, but it takes time. She doesn't give up, though. And it allows her to literally go to so many different places, so many corners of the world that you would often not think a Black woman would visit. So I really appreciate that kind of aspect of her story. Expanding on the theme of dreams in the book, I would definitely say she's realizing her dream as a travel writer, and she is doing what she can to make it, you know, a steady career for her. And she can't do it without the support, financial support of her parents. So all of those things are true. All of those things are true. It's a dream that she is realizing with the support that she has. And then I'm also thinking about the theme of dreams as far as Omelogo is concerned. Omelogo also does well for herself. She is a banker in Abuja, I believe. And in her story, you are made privy to a lot of the nefariousness of the operations within the bank that she works. And she has a decision to make at a point when the boss decides to kind of bring her a little bit closer and pull back the veil of how things work. The way she responds makes him think, oh, she's trustworthy. So she gets to really know the ins and outs, the nuts and bolts of what happens in that bank and how a lot of the corruption and mismanagement is done. So she, in this whole scenario, makes sure to take care of herself, but decides to establish a nonprofit. I don't know if it's officially a nonprofit, but she decides to establish an entity, let's call it that, where she's taking money from the bank and she is using it as, she's characterizing them as grants. And she's giving it to women all over in different regions and towns of Nigeria. She's going to them, she's telling them who she is, and many of them are just like, oh my God, this is a miracle. This is a gift from God. Thank you so much. I remember one part in her story where she wanted to give a grant to a woman and the woman was like, no, 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 I don't want this money. It sounds shady. And then her driver advised her to tell the woman that God sent her, to kind of frame it in a religious lens. And I think it worked. If I remember correctly, it worked. So I'm just thinking about how Omelaga is using her means, even though she is working for a very corrupt principal officer at this bank. And she has made sure that she is taking care of herself, but also is using this corrupt money for good and helping other women in the country realize their dreams of honestly just making an honest living, of not always having to worry about where their next meal is coming from or where they're going to be able to, or how they're going to be able to feed their children. And I just think that that's another way to kind of see this theme of dreams unfolding in the book, you know, separate from the dreams that they may or may not have had with prospective partners. I think about Kadiatu, who honestly, her dream was just to have a simple, stress-free, honest job. All she wanted to do was work and support her daughter. That's it. That's it. After her sister had died several years back and she had Binta and was able to come to the United States on asylum status. And I think when she first came on asylum, she was in New York, but then someone presented her with an opportunity in DC, which is where she met Chiamaka, presented her with an opportunity in DC to work in a hotel as housekeeping. So she initially didn't want to consider the opportunity because she had a partner. I don't know if they were legally married at that point, but she was committed to someone in New York. And I don't exactly remember what prompted her to finally decide to go to DC, but off she went. And honestly, made a decent living for herself. She was able to get a one-bedroom apartment with her daughter, who started going to school. She, as far as dreams are concerned for her and where she came from and her very humble upbringing, she was happy that she was able to work and rely on steady income that was enough to sustain her and her daughter in their, you know, small but very much was all she needed in that small apartment space. She wasn't asking for a lot. She was just asking for safety and security and consistency and stability in life. And that's what she was afforded. And honestly, I would say that for her, that was her dream. That was her dream. And then when she was sexually assaulted by, I don't remember if it was like the president of the World Bank or something, he was a Frenchman or something like that. And this story, Kariatu's story, is based on a true story of a woman who accused a prominent French politician, financier of sexual assault. So when that happened, she, you know, she didn't want all this attention brought on her, but it all happened anyway. And she had to kind of deal with the viciousness of the media and, you know, how it was affecting her daughter. And all she wanted, this nightmare, essentially, all she wanted was for it to go away. And I think before that assault happened, I would argue that Kariatu was living her American dream, considering where she had come from and all the loss she had experienced. All she wanted was stability, security, consistency, reliability in life. And that's what she got with her job and her apartment and, you know, supporting her daughter and seeing her grow and thrive. She was living her American dream. And then that was threatened by the assault and everything that came from that. I remember towards the end of the book when I believe it was Chiamaka that told Kariatu that they were dropping the case or the charges were dismissed or whatever. Kariatu was so happy. And I don't think Chiamaka expected the response or the reaction that Kariatu was going to give her, but Kariatu was so happy because I think she saw it as an opportunity to go back to life as it was before. Obviously, this was horrific what happened to her, but all she wanted was just to get that safety and security back, get that stability back in her life. All this mayhem, all this attention, all this just external noise and media craziness, she just wanted all that to go away. Because before this happened, she had realized her dream. She realized her American dream of a stable life, and that had been taken away from her for a time. So I'm just thinking about how, like, this theme of dreams is threaded through this book in ways that it doesn't entirely have to do with the men that are discussed. And I'm actually quite happy that I was able to see that, because in my efforts to not always center men in conversations, it's great to be able to kind of see how these women's lives unfolded outside of that, or how even with the role of the men in their lives, there was still so much more going on around them. And the role that men play in this book, I would say, ranges from insignificant and inconsequential to traumatic and catastrophic. Insignificant and inconsequential, I'm thinking mostly, if I were to kind of put it on a spectrum, the insignificant and inconsequential, I'm really thinking about Omologa and her short passion attacks, I think she called it. I would liken them to like flings. Like, she really didn't get serious with any of the men that were talked about in her subtext, like the subsection of the book. She, a couple of times, Chimamanda described how, like, she would be having sex with a man and he would think that he was doing something, but not really, but she didn't want him to feel bad or whatever. And there was one man that she kind of like after their fling, she ended things. She wasn't like fawning over him, and he was shocked. So he didn't know how to deal with himself and started to retaliate in ways that were like affecting her professionally, which is just so childish. So as far as like insignificant and inconsequential, I'm just thinking about there wasn't really any relationship of substance in Omelaga's story. If anything, the relationships of substance were her friends, particularly Hawa, who I wonder, honestly, if Omelaga had feelings that were deeper than just friendship for her. Even though she's married and everything, the way that she would kind of think about Hawa and talk about her just made me wonder if, honestly, she had some romantic thoughts or feelings around that woman. And I wonder if maybe that's a side of her that she hadn't explored or hadn't really allowed herself to explore at all. It's not really talked about at all in her story. Honestly, I'm just kind of thinking through that possibly this could be it, because her interactions with men are almost like they're meaningless, really, unless it has started to affect her life and professional like situation, like I said. But she would kind of just meet these men, kind of be infatuated for literally like a second, maybe have sex with them, maybe not, and then move on. But the relationships that were the most meaningful to her, that were literally life and death in some ways, was her friendship with Hawa, and then, you know, the relationship she had with Chiamaka as her cousin, who she loves so much. So I wonder about that. So moving on from that, as far as like the role that men played in this book, I would say Omelaga, the men in her story were like insignificant, inconsequential, irrelevant to her. And then moving on to kind of more involved or more impactful, whether positively or negatively, I honestly can't decide between Chiamaka and Zakora. I think kind of thinking about both of their stories, I'm gonna say that Zakora's story with Kwame was more traumatic or catastrophic than Chiamaka's story. And I'm saying that because there really isn't a happy ending or a resolve with Zakora's story. Zakora and Kwame started off pretty well. They were getting along. Zakora felt pretty secure in the relationship until she got pregnant and Kwame literally disappeared. Like, it's almost like he was a figment of her imagination. He wouldn't answer her texts. He wouldn't pick her calls. He eventually blocked her, I think. Like, he was there and then he wasn't there. And literally, the only thing that changed is because she was pregnant with his child. So I think after Omelaga, I would say Chiamaka's story, with degree of intensity of the involvement of these men in these women's lives, Chiamaka is next, because even though Darnell treated Chiamaka like shit, thank God she eventually realized herself and the relationship ended. And then she moved on. She moved on to other relationships. She was in a relationship with Chuka for a while and everyone thought that they were going to get married, but she didn't love him the way he loved her. And she mentions at some point in her story that she wished she tried harder with Chuka, but I actually think she did the right thing by leaving. It was definitely giving me the impression that she would settle if she married Chuka. And he was the type of guy, based off of like what I read, that obviously knows how to dazzle and charm while he's around a large group of people. He knows how to make people like him. He knows exactly what to do, but he showed glimpses of a darker side to Chiamaka when they were alone. And it was concerning. So even though everyone was like, oh, when are you guys getting married? When are you setting the date? Has he proposed? Blah, blah, blah. Chiamaka, only she could know deep down, you know, what it would mean for her to marry this man. And at the end of the day, she didn't. And I think she made the right decision, just how eventually she left Darnell. So, you know, she realized herself and moved on from these relationships and continued to date some European men, some white men. I, for some reason, couldn't take those relationships seriously, honestly. But I feel like if Chiamaka was a real person and I said that and she heard that, she would take offense to that. But I think about Darnell. I think about Chuka. And then I think about the relationship she had with the white men. Like, I don't even really remember their names. And in my mind, they're not as significant as those other relationships. I don't know if it's because they're black men and Nigerian men. Maybe to some degree, I have some more relatability. I don't know. But yeah, ultimately, I think Chiamaka was better off with her journey through, you know, these relationships versus Zecora, who thought that she may be getting her happily ever after and thought she was in a safe space and relationship to let this man know that she was pregnant by him. But she was sorely mistaken and just kind of left in a place where she didn't know herself and she didn't like herself. And she had to step into this role as mother while also contending with her relationship with her mom. That wasn't the best, but towards the end of the story, of her story, started to look like it was taking a different form for the better. But I would definitely say the way that Kwame just took off and did not even so much as acknowledge her texts about the baby being born and just everything that's going on, it just made me so sad for her, honestly. But honestly, there are real life stories like that, unfortunately. So continuing on the spectrum, we started with Omelogo, then we moved to Chiamaka. This is just my personal kind of interpretation of the degree of impactfulness and severity of the involvement of the men in these women's lives. So Omelogo, and then Chiamaka, and then Zecora. Kadiatu, I would say, was the most traumatic and catastrophic because of the forced sex that was put on her by this man. Chimamanda describes this event and ordeal in detail to where I'm just like, girl, why? But I think it was intentional. I think she wanted you to have a queasiness in your stomach. I think she wanted you to feel like you were there in a way. I think Chimamanda wanted you to almost put yourself in Kadiatu's shoes. And in that way, also kind of think of this person who this happened to in real life. But yeah, Kadiatu's story definitely was the most gut-wrenching for me. Because like I said before, she literally just wanted better for herself, considering her very humble upbringings. Just wanted to come here, have a steady job, provide a better life for her daughter. Didn't want any trouble. Just wanted to work, maybe have some friends, maybe send some money home, but really wasn't asking for more than that. And then this happened to her. And then the aftermath of everything, people trying to smear her name and turn her into something that she wasn't. It definitely reminded me just how much of a villain men can be and play in women's lives. A man can be somebody who comes and makes your life better, and then a man can also be someone who comes in and just scatters everything and just everything goes up in flames and you don't know your left from your right and you start questioning yourself and you aren't confident in who you are anymore and your self-esteem is at zero. Like, there's just so much that can happen. So I appreciate these women's stories in different ways. I did hear some commentary around the book at some points being less interesting, some people not being able to finish it. And that's fine. That's fine. I feel like some people were maybe comparing Dream Count to Americana, which was an amazing book. I remember reading Americana while I lived in DC, like 2015. It just brings me back to like carrying this big book in my bag, reading it on my train ride to and from work. And at points I would stop reading for a few days because I didn't want the book to finish. Like, I loved it that much. I can't say that I had the same relationship with this book, with Dream Count. And I think that only speaks to kind of just where Chimamanda is as an author. Americana came out literally 10 years ago. I was in a different place in my life. She was in a different place in her life. So much has happened since then. COVID happened. She lost both her parents, Chimamanda. She didn't write for a really long time as far as like a full length novel. So a lot has changed. I'm sure there's so much going on in her life that we are not privy to that maybe came out in the book. We may or may not know. So some people were saying, oh, it's not as interesting. It's boring, this, that, and the other. I think it just reflects where she is in life. And life oftentimes is not exciting all the time. Adult life, a lot of the times, is just getting through things day to day, just the grind, you know? And I think her book is realistic in that way, in the sense that some parts won't be fireworks and, you know, everything. It's really just four women navigating life, many points at which men are involved, whether positively or negatively or catastrophically. And it just kind of speaks to 40-something year old women just trying to figure out what is best for themselves. So yeah, I think I'm going to end the episode here as far as this part. I want to talk a little bit more in part two just about some of my favorite quotes in the book and some of the funny points and things like that. But I hope you guys enjoyed kind of this bird's eye view critique or assessment or whatever you want to call it of the book. Overall, I enjoyed it. I would agree that there were some parts where I felt like I had to push through more versus the story kind of carrying me and just reading. I would definitely say that. But I still appreciate it as a novel and a novel that Chimamanda wrote. And I wonder how, you know, it may age. I wonder how this novel may age. I don't tend to reread books, but who knows? It might kind of become relevant again or resurface down the road. But as far as a reading experience from an author that I wholeheartedly admire, I would say I have no complaints and I enjoyed myself. So thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it as always. Please share, please recommend to anyone who may enjoy this episode or past episodes. I'm going to do a separate YouTube book review video on Dream Count. I just wasn't up to kind of turning on the camera today, but I wanted to make sure I at least got the audio done. So I'm going to do a separate YouTube video on the book. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. And as always, please rate, please review on your preferred listening platform. Please reach out to me if you have any questions or thoughts or anything you want me to share my two cents on. I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much as always. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.